So this evening, I'd like to offer a few thoughts on the topic of the five hindrances. And some of you may be very familiar with this topic and others not. But it refers to something we're all very familiar with at the level of experience. And so it's a teaching that is really kind of pointing us to understanding what is it or how is it that we're not okay? This is so much of the time, it's just not okay. I don't know about for you, but just sitting here trying to arrange things. So I'm going to put the book here and the blooming cushion's wobbling and you know, I can't see properly. And I was reflecting and thinking, so what makes the difference between this just being the human experience of, you know, things being wobbly and eyes losing their efficacy and so on. What is it that makes that, you know, into suffering? How does that happen? And this is a very small example. But it's like on retreat, we have a chance to look into some of these processes, these conditioning, this sort of, you know, this predicament, and then we find we're upset. You know, what happened? Well, A did something, or they should have better cushions that don't wobble, or my mind should behave, it shouldn't be like this. No, well, they should have chocolate. You know, why don't we have dessert? We deserve dessert. We work so hard. Why isn't there any cake? Well, I should never have come here. And what is this all about anyway? And God, I'm going to go. This is the experience of the hindrance, or an example. They can really get going. It can be like this mild sense, and then sometimes they can blow up into what we sometimes call a multiple hindrance attack, where we just lose it. And so perhaps today, some of us have experienced some of this difficultness, and so I'd like to kind of unpack that a little bit in this, using this model, these five energies. So I want to say a little bit about what these are, and then say a bit more, and then come back to them in more detail. Okay. Of course, no category or concept can really do justice to this, you know, human experience. Like, it's just so, you know, mysterious and chaotic and unnameable sometimes. But maybe we have some helpful concept names, labels we can give to things. Aversion and desire or craving. So these are the first two. You know, like, I'm just not quite comfortable. When you get hot, or the mosquitoes are just annoying you, just wish they would just go away so you don't have to not kill them. or, I mean, Can I just check that, you know, aversion is so many different, from very mild irritation, we almost don't really know we're even averse. We're just feeling slightly, you know, through irritation, fear, boredom, anger, right through to full-blown rage, you know. And we all experience this full range, you know, in relationship to ourselves, you know, other people, the building, the weather, politics. Everything, isn't it? It's all in a way that there's just a sort of almost like we're being tested continually. How are you gonna? You be averse to this? Yeah? Yeah? Go for it. Go on. That's really annoying, isn't it? Wait, go on. Go on. And we have the habit, and so maybe some of these you'll recognise, because I think some of us, we tend more to some than others. You look and see what your favourite ones are. You know, sometimes it comes out as criticism, you know. Oh, they're terrible, they're stupid, you know. Oh, dear me, you know. They don't know anything, or it goes against us. We're stupid, we're bad, you know. God, come on. Come on, I mean, for goodness sake, say this little phrase a few times, you know, it's like, come on, ridiculous, you can't do even this. So it manifests in a lot of different ways. So I just want to say, has anybody here experienced any form of aversion today? Would you like to put your hand up? So you don't have to put your hand up, thank you. You see, this is part of the teaching here that's so important, is that it's pretty universal. And very, very much that if we want to really, for the meditation practice to really serve us, or for us to really engage in a helpful way, we have to get the idea that this aversion experience is going to be around. You know, in terms of the classic stages of enlightenment, it's there all the way to when you're an arahant, which is like top enlightenment, kind of along with the Buddha, you know, it's like it's all the greed, hatred, and delusions completely gone. So until then, guess what? Aversion is likely to arise. And on retreat, you know, we have the opportunity to actually see what happens in the mind, you know, because in our life we're going, yeah, it really is the bus for being late, you know, or it's that, and somehow you're on to the next thing and the next thing before you've even really noticed and had a chance to see what's happening. You know, it's so, this opportunity to, anyway, I'll say a little bit more about working with these, but recognizing that. And sometimes it just manifests as tension. We don't even know what we're averse about. We just feel a bit kind of, you know, like that, kind of... Like, and so he said, I wonder what's going on. My body's all frozen up. And, you know, and we can take a little bit of inquiry, investigation. So, yeah, I'll go back again. So desire, sense desire. Anybody experience any sense desire today? You know, just like, I'd like a little bit more lunch. That happened for me. 'Cause it was so nice. Yeah, you know, but this is nothing, it's like, it's not wrong, it's not kind of wrong in the way of like, wrong, bad, evil or something, it's just like, what does this do to our relationship with what's happening? It almost like, it kind of, it steals away from us our life. Our life is kind of caught up and taken up in these reactivities and the push-pull, and I can feel it standing in front of the lake or looking out the window, and it's just so lovely, and you almost feel this kind of like, I just want to, you know, eat, you know, with the lovely flower. Do you know that? Like, you can't just appreciate, but you're just kind of, something like that. It may be different for you, different things, but It's like we can't actually really enjoy where we are, because it's always somehow either a bit more or just over there. If it could just last a bit longer, if I could just be a bit more open to the beauty of the flower, you know, if I could just you know, it's just like, even if the object is, you know, it's like, oh, I can't, you know, and, oh, I'm, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm so distracted, I can't enjoy, you know, and so, the craving for things to be other than they are, the craving for things to be pleasing. You know, if you look at you, there's one really interesting way of looking at your experience and seeing how continually we're trying to get things to be pleasant. You know, and we don't want things to be unpleasant. And one of the great the factors of sense desire as a hindrance is it's profoundly weakening when we keep following it. Because we keep following it and then we keep needing things to be pleasant, so we have to keep looking for the pleasant and then our whole life can become consumed in that. And then we're even more averse to the unpleasant. And so we lose balance and can be, yeah, profoundly disempowered kind of effect. So I'll go through the other pairs. We have aversion and sense desire, craving. Now the next pair, we definitely were hearing about these in the groups this afternoon, so I don't know about for others who were not in those groups, but these two are called sloth and torpor, these very old-fashioned words, sloth and torpor on one hand and restlessness on the other. And we were hearing quite a lot of people saying, my mind just won't quieten down, and it's just going here and there and thinking about this person and worrying about that, and just, you know, kind of like that. Or the other side, I just keep falling asleep. I just keep falling asleep. Just like, oh, I've gone again. Shut your eyes, good intentions. And then suddenly, boing, oh. Oh, I wonder how long that one was. Oh, oops, no, I'm not going to let that happen again. Well, there it goes again. And so maybe we've had about 10 waking minutes in a sitting. So very common, very, very, again, not to judge these things, but to sort of recognize them and then we can work with them. I want to read you, I only read on four. I know there's one more. I will get to it, don't worry. But I wanted to share a few other things other teachers have said, and I particularly like this, description by Cherry Huber, an American Zen teacher, about this experience of these different energies in the mind. And she said, when I realize that human beings have energy that passes through the body, stirring up all kinds of sensations and feelings, I am free to be present, responding to life as it unfolds, rather than reacting to old beliefs, fears and unexamined assumptions. So responding rather than reacting. I think this is, you know, this is maybe like with all of practice, this crucial form of kindness that really is the heart of this practice, where we recognize what's happening in the mind, in our experience. And that's then makes it possible, doesn't it, to respond rather than react. So we, you know, so with all of these, that mindfulness, that presence, the steadiness that we're cultivating as we go on, that being able to know and name something like aversion or anger or craving, be able to see it arise, and the seeing can only happen with the steadiness and the clarity that we're working at cultivating. And that this is all in the service of befriending ourselves. So we might sometimes, actually just a little while ago, I was kind of conceptualizing this you know, the experience when you feel all kind of knotted up about something or whatever it is, it's like you could almost see it as kindness that's got confused. It's got stuck into some corner or some shape or some knot, or and like if we can find a way of opening to that, was this allowing, seeing, opening up the body, opening the mind, opening the heart in terms of attitude, you know, watching kind of how we're thinking about it again, the old beliefs and assumptions that we're bad for feeling anxious, and so we kind of are clamping down on something, and we don't even recognize that belief, you know, or I mustn't feel sad because my world is going to fall apart if I allow myself to feel sad. And I see the beliefs that hold some of these really stuck sort of places in place, and almost like, you know, imagining it as like energy that's just got itself into a tangle, and we just, you know, when you have a tangled piece of string or something, if you pull it and shove it, it just gets worse, doesn't it? You have to very gently kind of see and look and pull this little bit, and very patiently you can kind of untangle it. So there's a very similar principle in the meditative path, that we're developing this wise attention, this skillful attention, that we begin to realize that there's a way of attending to, we're talking in a group, you know, anxiety. If you give it a lot of space, this energy of restlessness, you can give it a lot of space, a lot of time, no pressure. Hello, anxiety. I'm willing to be with you until you feel better. Just stay there as long as you like. And this kind of approach, again, it's so much a metta practice. It's a kind practice. It's a kindness practice. It's being able to bring this sort of rather counterintuitive, maybe kind of, you know, in sort of approach to these areas where we, you know, have difficulty, or where we don't realize that we're pushing against something. But then once we start to soften the body and kind of bring a little bit of gentleness, so that has an amazing effect, sometimes quite rapid, sometimes not rapid, takes a long time, repetition. So different things, different skillfulness that we can bring to sort of help these experiences, and a kind of creativity with that, which is something that nobody else can quite tell us. We have to learn through sensitivity to our own process, and through that we learn sort of what's needed. One of the other general antidotes to these troublesome energies and mind states and things are, which the Buddha mentions often, as wise friends and wise conversation, or wise friends and suitable conversation. So hopefully the interaction, Dharma talks and time in groups and one-to-ones, that's one of the ways, you know, that we don't have to do this all on our own. We have this engagement and we have support of others. Stephen Batchelor said something which I think emphasizes this sense of, that I've found incredibly important. I don't know if you will, but that when we can really have that steadiness and patience and interest in our experience, the lovely and the difficult, that it's we begin to see how actually it's the friction, it's the points of, you know, where it feels difficult, that are actually where the openings, that the healing and the releasing and the freedom come most importantly. Now Stephen wrote this book called Living with the Devil, And in the Buddhist cosmology, in the teachings, you see this figure Mara appear, M-A-R-A. And it's kind of like a personification of, you know, all the hindrances in all their different forms. And he appears in the stories. He's like an old man at one point walking on a stick, you know, with a stick. And he comes in these different guises and tries to tempt the Buddha. And the Buddha's, the key teaching there is he will meet this Mara figure, and he says, I know you, Mara. Yeah, it's very powerful, like that, you know, not getting him to go away or anything like that, but I know you, Mara. And this is the power of mindfulness in a way. If you know, maybe you've had that experience, that the difference between, for example, feeling very angry and feeling kind of consumed in it, caught in it, you know, and just kind of acting out of that. And when you know it, you can actually feel the energy, walk with it, work with it, you know, open your body to it, you know, get help with it, kind of. It's not sort of act from it and be governed by it and driven by it. It's so different. You're not repressing, you're not acting out. And this is really possible. This is part of what we're practicing for, those really difficult moments, those difficult patterns. Anyway, Stephen says, without the devil to obstruct it, one could not create a path, for a path is kept open by overcoming the hindrances that prevent freedom of movement along it. Just think, this is so important. The path is kept open by overcoming the hindrances that prevent freedom of movement along it. So, for example, when we start cultivating kindness, any kind, say what, it's going to show up, isn't it? Everything where, I kind of, you know, that's not there, or we, you know, or if you're trying to cultivate calmness and it seems so elusive, and then it seems like you're even more hyper aware of all the agitation, and especially say when it's quiet, the noise in your mind feels so loud. But what Stephen's pointing to is this, it's like that's what helps us to wake up. It's sort of maybe the part of the human predicament where it's the kind of doorway into our potential, or it's the grit that makes the pearl, that kind of image. So let's see. So the fifth one, sorry. So we've got aversion and desire, push-pull. We've got restlessness and sleepiness, so energy. And the last one is doubt, which is maybe that's been around today. It's like, what should I do? Should I go for a walk? Should I have a cup of tea? Should I do my yoga? Should I go for a swim? Oh, I don't know. Never mind. I'll just... whatever. Or doubts about being here. I just should have gone on holiday, you know. Should have gone to Spain, or I don't know, wherever. Doubts about this form of practice, or practicing at all, you know, or the teachers, or the teachings, or the, you know, doubt. And this sort of, you go up into your head, and it's think, and it's just, you know, he's like being trapped in there with 15 confused people who won't shut up. or maybe just one confused person who won't shush. And sometimes we make it worse because we go up there and try and argue with them or figure it out. And that generally doesn't work because it's always going to be feeding itself. And that's another classic sort of thing to notice about these hindrances. When we feel averse, we're averse to everything, you know. When we doubt everything. or it kind of takes over, it becomes a filter. And so one of the key things with doubt, apart from recognizing it, is to come into the body. You know, it's like, wait a minute, there's just come sort of down in, out, sort of under, below the thinking, and start feeling the feelings, feeling into the body. And that helps with a lot of the hindrances, that we unhook from the specific topics. This is another key thing, isn't it? Like, whether it's aversion or desire or, you know, doubt, it's like we get caught up in particular stories or topics, and I've got to figure this out or that, or and we get so kind of lost in that particular topic, whereas we need to actually come and sort of feel the underlying energy of that. The Buddha has these wonderful images for how these hindrances can feel. So aversion is likened to an illness, or like water. It's these images of water. It's like water boiling. It's boiling away. You know, and sometimes if we don't express the anger, we're trying to push it down. And it's like we feel like a steam engine sort of heating up or something. With desire, he described it as being like being in debt. You know, being in debt, always just not having enough, giving ourselves away to wanting something else, wanting something somewhere else or more. And he likened that to water that's dyed a colour. So you look and everything, you know, is it like with desire, you look through and you look and everything that you want is, you know, it just looks a certain way. And it's of you, you know, you so many different things you can see that with, can't you? If you've ever had, you know, you've been obsessed with somebody, attracted or in love or in lust or whatever, and they're just completely, you know, it's just this whole completely saturated, or, you know, it's just is desirable. It's just that the object, the person, has just become completely imbued with this energy, and it's so convincing and it's so total. And then, isn't it, some time passes, days, months, years, and then it changes, and you can look back and see, oh my goodness, you know, these things can just take over and deprive of us of all perspective and all wisdom sometimes. Or sloth and torpor, he described as like being in prison. Or like water when it's full of algae. You know, the water is just, it's just full of stuff. We're just full of junk stuff that's taking up all our energy, kind of depriving us of any kind of clarity. So we can recognize these energies and these mind states as being really normal. This is so much part of what we're doing, and that if we can see them as that, I think maybe one of the things it does is it makes practice more ordinary. I mean, we think of it, you know, it can provide us with extraordinary experiences and heightened mind states, and I don't know, maybe we have ideas that that's what it's all about. Not, you know, sort of grubbing around, you know, if you like, at earth level with, you know, feeling bored and irritated, and, you know, it just doesn't sound very glamorous. But it's, isn't it, it's sort of for our life here, our life in the world, it's where we can really find kind of peace and happiness with the way things are. We can find out how to unhook from these patterns and energies. I'm trying to think. So however you are feeling right now, just invite you to just check in with that a little bit as we sit here. And so, just what do you notice? How are you? How are you feeling? Are you aware of the presence of anything troubling? Or you might say, what's in the way of you feeling at ease right now? What's in the way of you feeling completely at ease with the way things are? So if anything presents itself in response to that question, sense in the body or in the heart or the mind, can we know that? Can we really come close, really meet that with a sense of spaciousness and kindness here and now? Not having to do anything, but to really know that. Be willing to meet Mara. Ah, hello Mara. Come sit down, have some tea. Ajahn Sumedho, great Thai forest teacher, former abbot of Amaravati Monastery, said, "When you're willing to be the one who has all the patience in the world to be with the existing condition, you can let it cease." Sometimes it can feel like there's so much in our life, in our psyche, in our world that has to be sorted out. And it seems endless. And in a way, it is. But the Buddha is inviting us to see that something can end. And that is dukkha, suffering, resistance. And as we learn to really be present and open to our life, maybe we can begin to understand this great heart, this great vastness of heart that can actually not suffer, but hold and touch and let go with great compassion and wisdom. And this is possible for each of us to be realized here and now with how we are, and not some distant ideal person that we will never become. So I'd like to finish with a poem that certainly some of you are familiar with. I've read it more than once here in Finland, I think. And every time I read it, I find it a great teaching for me, so I hope that it may be that for you too this evening. So it's called The Guest House by Rumi. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door, laughing, and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. So may we not give away our kindness, our joy, our freedom to an imagined past, to an imagined future. May we allow ourselves to let this life, this moment. Be fully, fully received and fully known. So that we can live our life and really and see clearly. For our own benefit and happiness, and the benefit and happiness of all beings. Thank you for your attention.